those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song award.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beat.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song award.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And I'm especially pleased to be able to announce today that the United States will provide an additional $1 billion security assistance package for Ukraine.
We need to stop the killing in Ukraine. Sending weapons without a diplomatic strategy is just a recipe for endless war and a possible U.S.-Russian confrontation.
The United States announces an additional $1 billion in military aid to Ukraine in a massive arms package announced at NATO headquarters. With no end in sight for the war or U.S. military spending on Ukraine, we'll speak with national security expert Bill Hartung, author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. Then President Biden celebrates Pride Month at the White House amidst attacks on LGBTQ communities.
Just look at what happened in Idaho last weekend. 31 white supremacists stopped just before they reached the Pride celebration, where they apparently planned to unleash violence on people gathering peacefully in a show of their pride. Violent attacks on the community, including ongoing attacks on transgender women of color, make our nation less safe because the attacks are more than ever last year, and they're on pace again this year.
The recent wave of violent confrontations comes amidst an escalation of anti-LGBTQ rhetoric among far-right media figures and politicians. We'll speak with Ari Drennan of Media Matters and the Southern Poverty Law Center's Michael Edison Hayden, whose new Hate Watch analysis has headlined, "Far-right influencers hyped Coeur d'Alene Pride before Patriot Front showed up." We'll also speak with Genesec Gutierrez of Familia, Trans Queer Liberation Movement. She was invited to the White House Pride Month celebration, but declined to protest the detention and deportation of LGBTQ immigrants and asylum seekers. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations Refugee Agency says the number of displaced people displaced from their homes worldwide has reached a staggering new high of over 100 million. That's up from 89 million just a few months ago, due in part to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the growing food crisis. This is UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi.
Will this also cause people to move? Now, it's very difficult to tell, but I cannot imagine how. If you have a food crisis on top of everything that I have described, right? War, human rights, climate, you name it. On top of that, you have a food crisis. It will just accelerate the trends that are described in this report and that we have seen accelerating already in the first few months of the year.
The surge in global refugees comes as parts of Africa are facing their worst drought in decades at a time when food and energy costs are soaring. The United Nations has warned 350,000 children in Somalia could die by the end of the summer. A recent report by two UN agencies estimated an all-time high of up to 49 million people in 46 countries could now be at risk of falling into famine or famine-like conditions. Earlier this week, Congressmember Ilhan Omar, who is a Somali refugee, tweeted, "This should be the biggest story in the world right now." The leaders of Germany, France, and Italy have arrived in Ukraine to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. During a stop in the Ukrainian city of Irpin, French President Emmanuel Macron criticized what he called Russian barbarism. Ahead of the trip, Macron repeated his call for Ukraine and Russia to hold talks to end the war.
Because at some point, when we have helped as much as possible to resist, and I hope Ukraine will have won, and above all for the fighting to have stopped, we will have to negotiate. The Ukrainian president and his officials will have to negotiate with Russia, and we, Europeans, will be at the table bringing up the guarantees of security, the elements which concern our continent, and that is the reality of things.
On Wednesday, Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke by phone with Russian President Vladimir Putin in the second known call between the two leaders since the war began. Xi reportedly expressed support for Russia's, quote, sovereignty and security, and pledged to increase ties with Moscow. He is also said to have called on all parties to push for a, quote, proper settlement of the Ukraine crisis. Also on Wednesday, NATO defense leaders met in Brussels and pledged to increase military support for Ukraine. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin announced a new $1 billion U.S. military package. The NATO meeting came as heavy fighting continues in eastern Ukraine. The United Nations is warning 10,000 civilians trapped in the Ukrainian city of Severodonetsk are running out of essential supplies. Russia seized about 80% of the city. Meanwhile, Ukrainian forces have reportedly shelled a maternity ward and four other health facilities in Donetsk, an area controlled by Russia. According to the United Nations, no one was killed or injured in the maternity ward attack, but some pregnant women had to be transferred to other hospitals. In other news from Ukraine, two U.S. veterans who volunteered to fight with Ukraine have been missing since June 9th. This, according to their families. The State Department has not confirmed the reports. Brazilian authorities say a suspect has confessed to killing and dismembering British journalist Dom Phillips and the Brazilian indigenous expert Bruno Araujo Pereira. Brazilian police said the suspect led them to a spot where human remains were found. In a statement, a local indigenous group condemned the murders and praised the work of Phillips and Pereira, saying, quote, they were both human rights defenders and died doing work to look after us indigenous people. Days before Pereira went missing, he reportedly received threats for his efforts to stop illegal fishing in the area. The two suspects arrested so far are brothers who fish for a living. A number of new revelations have come to light about Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 election and the January 6th insurrection. On Wednesday, the January 6th House Select Committee released video evidence that Republican Congressmember Barry Loudermilk gave a private tour of the Capitol to a group of people on January 5th, one day before the insurrection. At the time, the Capitol was closed to the public due to the pandemic. In the video, one man on the tour is seen photographing stairways, tunnels, hallways, and security checkpoints. The committee also released what it says is video from January 6th from outside the Capitol of one of the men who is on the tour with South Carolina Congressmember Loudermilk.
There's no escape, Pelosi, Schumer, Nadler. We're coming for you. We're coming in like white on rice for Pelosi, Nadler, Schumer, even you, AOC. We're coming to take you out. We'll pull you out by your hairs. How about that, Pelosi? You go, might as well make yourself another appointment. I'll get done with you. You're going to need a shine up on top of that bald head.
Correction on the tour that was held the day before. It was conducted by Georgia Congressman Loudermilk. The January 6th committee is holding its third public hearing today, beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern. Democracy Now! Will live stream it at democracynow.org. The hearing is focusing on Donald Trump's efforts to pressure Mike Pence to block Joe Biden from becoming president. Part of that effort was led by Trump legal advisor John Eastman, who claimed Pence could single-handedly overturn the election. In related news, the Washington Post reporting Ginny Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, exchanged emails with Eastman about the election. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports Eastman appeared to have inside knowledge of a debate within the Supreme Court over how it should handle Trump's election fraud claims. In an email sent in late December 2020, Eastman wrote, quote, "I understand that there's a heated fight underway." Another pro-Trump lawyer responded, writing that the, quote, "odds of action before January 6 will become more favorable if the justices start to fear that there will be wild chaos on January 6 unless they rule by then either way." John Eastman is a former law clerk of Justice Clarence Thomas. In more news on the January 6 insurrection, new court filings show the leader of the far-right Proud Boys received plans to occupy 6 congressional office buildings as well as the Supreme Court around the time of January 6. The document was titled 1776 Returns. One section of the report was named Storm the Winter Palace. Part of the document reads, quote, "No Trump, no America." New Mexico's state Supreme Court has ordered a Republican-led county commission to certify the results of the June 7th primary. The commission has refused to do so, citing conspiracy theories about the county's voting machines, which were made by Dominion, the company at the heart of many of Trump's false claims about the 2020 election. One member of the Otero County Commission is Coy Griffin, who co-founded the group Cowboys for Trump and once said, "The only good Democrat is a dead Democrat." Griffin faces sentencing on Friday for his role in the January 6th insurrection. The standoff in New Mexico comes as voting rights activists are expressing increasing alarm as supporters of Trump's attempted coup take control of more local election bodies around the country. An advisory panel to the Food and Drug Administration has unanimously recommended approval of Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines for babies and young children. The FDA could authorize the vaccines as soon as Friday, which means shots could be available beginning next week for the first time for children under the age of 5. States have already ordered millions of shots, but there has been one exception. Florida has not yet pre-ordered any COVID shots for kids. In other COVID news, the National Institutes of Health has announced Dr. Anthony Fauci has tested positive for COVID-19. The 81-year-old doctor is reportedly experiencing mild symptoms. In Geneva, public health activists staged a die-in protest at the World Trade Organization summit Wednesday. They were calling on nations to embrace a broad waiver on intellectual property rules to save lives during the COVID pandemic. In economic news, the Federal Reserve has increased interest rates by 0.75 percentage point in an attempt to combat rising inflation. It's the largest rate hike since 1994. The rate hike will make it more expensive for people to borrow for homes, cars, and get other loans. The Justice Department has filed federal hate crimes charges against the 18-year-old white supremacist gunman who shot dead 10 black people at a Buffalo supermarket last month. If convicted, Peyton Gendron could be sentenced to the death penalty, even though the Biden administration's imposed a moratorium on federal executions. Attorney General Merrick Garland spoke Wednesday.
The affidavit in support of the complaint quotes the defendant as stating that his goal was to, quote, kill as many blacks as possible. The affidavit outlines how the defendant prepared for months to carry out this attack. It alleges that he selected a target in this zip code because it has the highest percentage of black people close enough to where he lives.
The attorney general was speaking in Buffalo. And in Washington, D.C., the street outside the Saudi embassy has been officially renamed Jamal Khashoggi Way to honor the Washington Post columnist who was dismembered inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul almost 4 years ago. The D.C. City Council approved the name change last year. A street naming ceremony was held Wednesday, just weeks before President Biden's scheduled to visit Saudi Arabia in an effort to mend ties with the oil-rich kingdom. The Yemeni-born Nobel Peace Prize winner Tawakkol Karman spoke at the ceremony in D.C. and criticized Biden's trip.
This means that Biden has abandoned his commitment to support human rights around the world. That Biden has abandoned his commitment to punish Jamal Khashoggi's killer. That Biden has abandoned his promises to his people that he will be hand with hand with the all freedom fighters around the world. And this is shame. It is shame. Shame on Biden administration.
Tal Cole Harmon won the Nobel Peace Prize. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show with Ukraine, as leaders of Germany, France, and Italy are in Kyiv to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Ahead of the trip, French President Emmanuel Macron voiced his support for Ukraine, but repeated his call for Ukraine and Russia to hold talks to end the war.
Because at some point, when we have helped as much as possible to resist, and I hope Ukraine will have won, and above all for the fighting to have stopped, we will have to negotiate. The Ukrainian president and his officials will have to negotiate with Russia, and we, Europeans, will be at the table bringing up the guarantees of security, the elements which concern our continent, and that is the reality of things.
On Wednesday, Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke by phone with Russian President Vladimir Putin in the second known call between the two leaders since the war began. Xi reportedly expressed support for Russia's, quote, sovereignty and security and pledged to increase ties with Moscow. He's also said to have called on all parties to push for a, quote, proper settlement of the Ukraine crisis. Also on Wednesday, NATO defense leaders met in Brussels and pledged to increase military support for Ukraine. Speaking at NATO headquarters in Belgium, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin announced a new $1 billion U.S. military package to Ukraine.
And I'm especially pleased to be able to announce today that the United States will provide an additional $1 billion security assistance package for Ukraine. And that includes our 12th drawdown from DoD inventory since August of 2021. And it includes guided MLRS munitions, 18 more M777 howitzers, and the tactical vehicles to tow them, and 36,000 rounds of 155 millimeter ammunition.
The Washington Post reports the massive arms package also includes mobile Harpoon anti-ship missile launchers amidst concerns Russia will target Ukraine's port cities. For more, we're joined by Bill Hartung, national security and foreign policy expert at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin, and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. His latest piece in Forbes is headlined, Hawks' Arguments for Jacking Up Pentagon Spending Make No Sense. Bill Hartung, welcome back to Democracy Now! Explain that piece.
Well, you know, here we have emergency aid to Ukraine of $53 billion, about half military, which is one of the largest packages ever, about twice the peak levels of aid to the Afghan security forces during that 20-year war. But then you have members of Congress turning around saying, oh, no, that's not enough. We also have to jack up the Pentagon's regular budget, which Biden has proposed at $813 billion, an enormous figure, which is larger than the peaks of the Vietnam War, the Korean War, $100 billion or more in excess of the peak of the Cold War. So you've already got this huge budget. And people like James Inhofe of Oklahoma, Mike Rogers of Alabama want to add at least $50 billion to that. And part of their rationale is support for Ukraine, which is just kind of a stalking horse for increases that they were pushing anyway well before the war started.
So talk more about this $1 billion on top of the tens of billions that the U.S. has pledged and sent to Ukraine. Explain how it works. What's paid for? What is just the U.S. sending weapons?
Well, some of it is what they call drawdown authority, which comes out of U.S. existing stocks. Some of it is from a special Ukraine security assistance fund that's in the Pentagon budget. So some of the money comes directly to the contractors. Some of it they'll get paid later because there's funds to replenish those stocks by giving contracts to Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and Boeing and the other countries that are cashing in on this war. So there's sort of multiple ways that they're getting paid, but they're certainly getting paid quite a bit. And they're even kind of crowing about this to their investors, that this is going to be a source of revenue for them for some time to come.
Let's go to the Lockheed Martin CEO speaking on CBS's Face the Nation last month.
We're planning for the long run and not just in the javelin, because this situation, the Ukraine conflict, has highlighted a couple of really important things for us. One is that we need to have superior systems in large enough numbers, so like Javelin, Stingers, advanced cruise missiles, equipment like that. So we know there's going to be increased demand for those kinds of systems from the U.S. And for our allies as well, and beyond into Asia Pacific most likely too. The second really valuable lesson was control of the airspace is really critical. So the Ukrainians are managing to control their airspace. The Russian Air Force doesn't have free rein over the entire country. And the reason that they don't is because the Ukrainians can still fly their aircraft, and they also have a pretty effective integrated air and missile defense system. So products and systems like F-16, F-35, Patriot missiles, THAAD missiles, we know that there's going to be increased demand for those kinds of equipment too, because the threat between Russia and China is just going to increase even after the Ukraine war. We hope is over soon. Those two nations, and regionally Iran and North Korea, are not going to get less active. Probably they're going to get more active.
So that's the CEO of Lockheed Market, Lockheed Martin, James, is it pronounced Takelet? Bill Hartung, author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex.
Yes, and it was quite extraordinary. That really was a commercial for Lockheed Martin, run as if it was a news interview. And it was grounded in fear-mongering about Russia, about China, about Iran, about North Korea. When many of these issues have to be dealt with diplomatically, there's no way to buy or out of these challenges militarily. Russia has shown its weakness in Ukraine. It can't possibly threaten NATO members in Europe. China spends one-third of what the United States spends on its military, has only 1/13th time as many nuclear weapons. The U.S. has a superior Navy, a superior Air Force. But ultimately, that problem needs to be solved through diplomacy. We need to cooperate with China on things like reducing climate change, on preventing future pandemics, on righting the global economy. So this kind of military-first approach is just going to undermine the security of America and the world. And companies like Lockheed Martin are fueling that, you know, with the kind of interview that their CEO gave on a national news network.
So it's not only that the networks are brought to you, have, you know, break for commercials every however many minutes, 5 or 6 minutes, and often they are military weapons manufacturers, but they're actually the so-called news whole. The news itself is now we're having analysis of foreign policy by the weapons CEOs.
Exactly. After this news commercial, we'll bring you another commercial, basically.
You mentioned nuclear weapons and nuclear war. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, known as SIPRI, is warning the risk of nuclear war is higher today than at any time since the height of the Cold War. It was in its annual report, SIPRI saying, the global stockpile of nuclear weapons is expected to soon rise for the first time in decades as the U.S., Russia, China, France, and the United Kingdom move to expand or modernize their arsenals, the U.S. and Russia possessing about 90% of the world's nuclear warheads. How concerned should people be, Bill Hartung?
Well, I think the biggest concern comes with Ukraine. If that conflict escalates into a U.S.-Russian or NATO-Russian confrontation, the risk of nuclear war will go up significantly. The U.S. modernization program, $2 trillion over 3 decades, is part of that arms race and should be scaled back, as some members of Congress have called for. And there needs to be discussions about this among the nuclear powers. At the moment, there's no real channels between the U.S. and China. There's only one treaty left between the United States and Russia, the New START treaty. As far as we know, there's not even low-level talks going on about ways to reduce the nuclear dangers going forward. So we're really at a turning point, I think, where the public has to speak up. A majority of Americans are concerned about nuclear weapons in a way they haven't been probably since the Ronald Reagan administration in the 1980s. Back then, it provoked a major nuclear disarmament movement, a million people in Central Park, the nuclear freeze movement, which pushed back the buildup, helped reduce the numbers, got some of the intermediate range nuclear weapons out of Europe. So I think, you know, with all that people have to deal with, this is another item that should be high on their agenda in terms of making the world a safer place. And we have things coming up like the Poor People's March on Saturday, which is going to raise a whole range of issues about things like reducing the military budget and funding human needs, meeting the needs of the poor in our country and so forth. So I think there is movement out there, but it needs to be accelerated. And I think all of us need to be thinking about this because we can't rely on the governments to take care of this problem if they don't feel pressure from the public.
In another recent piece that you wrote, Bill, you say there can be no foreign policy for the middle class without a diplomatic resolution to the Ukraine war. You talk about U.S. funding for the Ukraine war in a comparative context. Explain what you found.
Well, the big package, the two emergency packages of $53 billion, is more than the Biden administration has allocated to deal with climate change in its most recent budget. It's almost as big as the budget of the State Department. And then the military piece is more than twice the peak year of aid to Afghan security forces. So it's just an enormous package, and it's at a time when many other programs are not being met nearly to the levels they need. And of course, with the defeat of the Build Back Better plan, there's going to have to be other means pursued to fund some of these needs. And if it's an open-ended commitment to Ukraine without a diplomatic strategy, and it's also an $800 billion plus Pentagon budget, there's just not a lot of money left to meet things like dealing with the pandemic, climate change, racial and economic injustice, which on a day-to-day basis are greater threats to people's lives than anything we have to face militarily.
I mean, just on that point about the comparisons of where money is going, you say the Pentagon request includes a weapon system, the F-35 combat aircraft program, slated to get as much as the entire discretionary budget of the Centers for Disease Control. The significance.
Yes, it's a perfect example of how skewed our priorities are. A million Americans have died from the COVID pandemic, far more than in, you know, every war going back probably to World War I. And so, you know, the fact that we can't invest there, but we can buy an aircraft that's overpriced, underperforming, not really necessary as part of a rational defense strategy, is a testament in part to the power of the military-industrial complex. There's an F-35 caucus that pushes this in the House, members who've got pieces of the plane built in their district. The industry as a whole has 700 lobbyists, more than one for every member of Congress. They spend millions and millions of dollars on lobbying and campaign contributions. And their voices are heard much more loudly in the halls of Congress than the voices of people who are calling for more rational budget priorities that meet our needs. And that's why I think, you know, the march on Saturday is going to be a big boost to the national conversation about getting our priorities straight.
Finally, Bill, how could the U.S. push Ukraine and possibly Russia, if you think that's possible, to engage in peace talks?
Well, I think ultimately the government of Ukraine will have to decide what kind of compromises it's willing to make. But I think the United States can ratchet down the rhetoric, stop talking about weakening Russia, stop pushing Putin into a corner. I think, you know, certainly the sanctions may have to be adjusted in the context of a peace talk. So I think there can be a channel of the United States sending a signal, both to Ukraine and Russia, that there needs to be a negotiated end to this war and an end to the killing. Ultimately, you know, the two parties will have to work it out. But the United States is a major player here, and it shouldn't just – its only policy shouldn't be sending weapons without some sort of diplomatic strategy to go with it.
Do you see the media egging on the military response of the United States?
Well, at different points, the media really has kind of pushed for a more hawkish response. I mean, there was the whole thing early on why aren't you doing a no-fly zone, which have meant would have meant direct U.S.-Russian military engagements? Why can't you send the weapons more quickly? When, in fact, you know, this is quite an extraordinary arming campaign of the likes we haven't probably seen, you know, since World War II, just in terms of the speed of it and the volume of the weapons and so forth. So the idea that, you know, just sending more weapons or even escalating to further measures is going to end the war, I think is both misguided and dangerous.
Bill Hartung, we thank you for being with us, national security and foreign policy expert at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. We'll link to your latest piece in Forbes, headlined, Hawks' Arguments for Jacking Up Pentagon Spending Make No Sense. Next up, as President Biden marks Pride Month at the White House, we look at a wave of violent confrontations amidst an escalation of anti-LGBTQ rhetoric among far-right media figures and politicians. Stay with us. By Haley Kiyoko. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In a Pride Month celebration and address at the White House Wednesday, President Biden announced several executive actions to address a slew of state-level discriminatory laws in Republican-led states that target the rights of LGBTQ plus children and adults. The orders seek to discourage so-called conversion therapy, a discredited practice to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity, and also aim to promote gender-affirming surgery and expand foster care protections for gay and transgender parents and children. In a ceremony in the East Room, President Biden said he was moved to take action to prevent what he called hateful attacks by Republican governors and lawmakers.
I don't have to tell you about the ultra-MAGA agenda attacking families and our freedoms. 300 discriminatory bills introduced in states across this country. In Texas, knocking on front doors to harass and investigate parents who are raising transgender children. In Florida, going after Mickey Mouse, for God's sake. That strike goes to home. No, but think about this. All of you in this room know better than anyone that these attacks are real and consequential for real families, for real families. Just look at what happened in Idaho last weekend. 31 white supremacists stopped just before they reached the Pride celebration, where they apparently planned to unleash violence on people gathering peacefully in a show of their pride. I'm grateful for the swift response of law enforcement, and they responded. They responded. Violent attacks on the community, including ongoing attacks on transgender women of color, make our nation less safe because the attacks are more than ever last year, and they're on pace again this year.
In addition to legislative attacks on the rights of LGBTQ plus people, Biden mentioned Saturday's foiled attack on a pride event in Coeur d'Alene, Ohio, where 31 members of the white supremacist neo-Nazi group Patriot Front were arrested. Police say the men were found packed into a U-Haul truck armed with riot gear, including a smoke grenade and shields. A tipster had called police saying they had seen a, quote, little army being loaded into the truck at a nearby hotel. At a news conference, Coeur d'Alene Police Chief Lee White said the members of the Patriot Front were arrested on charges of conspiracy to riot.
They were wearing arm patches. One of them said Patriot Front. The majority of them had logos on their hats. They were consistent with the Patriot Front group that you would see online. They were also wearing khaki pants, and everyone was dressed exactly the same. Well, very, very similar anyway. And if you go online, look up Patriot Front, that's exactly how these individuals were dressed.
Police officers in Idaho say they've received death threats since arresting the Patriot Front members, who were released on bail set at $300 per person. Also Saturday, the same day of the planned attack on the Pride event in Coeur d'Alene, members of the far-right Proud Boys interrupt a drag queen story hour for kids at a library at the San Lorenzo Public Library in California. They confronted the host, Kyle Chu, whose drag name is Panda Dulce, who recounted the ordeal to KPIX-TV.
I've always received death threats, hate mail for doing drag queen story hour. This time, it felt very close to violence. It was extremely loud. There was a cacophony of voices just yelling over one another, taunting me, calling me a groomer, a pedophile, a tranny, an it. Asking, like interrogating the parents, why are you bringing your kids to this? I remember one child looked to their mom and was like, what is going on? Why are they raising their voices? Who are these people? And there are these men who are towering over them. I didn't feel safe because one of them was wearing a shirt with an AK-47 on it, and it said, kill your local pedophile.
Leading up to both the attack in Idaho and on the drag queen story hour in the Bay Area, both events were the focus of a viral right-wing influencer account called Libs of TikTok, which our next guests say helped set the stage for white supremacists to target them. For more on all of this, we're joined in Berkeley, California, by Ari Drennan, LGBTQ Program Director for Media Matters, and Michael Edison Hayden, Senior Investigative Reporter with Southern Poverty Law Center, where he focuses on internet radicalization and far-right extremism. His latest Hate Watch analysis is headlined, Far-Right Influencers Hyped Coeur d'Alene Pride Before Patriot Front Showed Up. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Let's begin with you, Michael Edison Hayden. Can you just explain what happened in Coeur d'Alene? A little army packed into a U-Haul? What if the police hadn't found them?
I mean, obviously the situation could have been a lot worse. You know, we've seen Patriot Front use this kind of U-Haul tactic where they rent out a U-Haul and then they pack all their guys quite uncomfortably into the, you know, into the truck. And then kind of unleash them at these events where usually people are expressing themselves. Like Women's March, for example, was one target where they try to steal the show and direct attention to their own explicitly fascist agenda. That's essentially what they do. Obviously, whenever there were white supremacists trying to mix it up with people in the LGBTQ community, there's always a potential for violence.
And, can you explain really who scary. The Patriot Front is and who its sure. leader is?
Sure. Well, if you recall, in Charlottesville during Unite the Right, there's a group called Vanguard America. And James Fields, the killer of Heather Heyer, marched with Vanguard America that day. And after his murder became international headline news, the group rebranded as Patriot Front, and they have this like the slogan, the Reclaim America. It's a lot of garbage about reclaiming this European ancestry in the United States, and essentially they're trying to sell people who might be predisposed to like conservative propaganda to buy into this explicitly fascist propaganda by using all kinds of conservative tropes, right? Patriot Front. And that's basically who they are. They tend to get anywhere between the 30 or so people you saw there and as many as 50 to 80 people marching at an event. That's basically who they are.
A mother of one of these men said she realized he was getting radicalized. His first comments were denying the Holocaust, and she was trying to figure out how to stop him. She said, okay, Patriot Front, or you're moving out of this house. So he was forced to move out. And then you have this Proud Boys attack, Michael, in the Bay Area. And explain again for people who aren't familiar with who the Proud Boys are, the group of leaders now just indicted for seditious conspiracy for the January 6th insurrection.
Yeah, I mean, the Proud Boys are a neo-fascist group that is become notorious for these street brawls and now, you know, during the insurrection on January 6th, really elevated their game to this very coordinated operation we saw that day. You know, one of the figures was wearing a shirt that says kill pedophiles or whatever. It's important to understand the context of that. Pedophile doesn't mean pedophile in this case. It means any person who is LGBTQ. We have seen propaganda on social media being pushed very heavily starting in around April by figures like Jack Pizobic, who is associated with a number of hate groups, just trying to using this term groomer on social media. Twitter lets them do it, essentially. And it's just basically constantly equating, you know, any person who is trans, gay, with being a pedophile. And so when a person comes in, storms, and they're, you know, part of a neo-fascist street brawling gang, what they're saying is kill a person who is LGBTQ.
And again, in Coeur d'Alene, that where the little army was picked up, that's right next to the significance of Idaho for the white supremacists. I mean, Coeur d'Alene right next to Aryan Nation's compound where they used to have it in Hayden Lake.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, it was a, you know, kind of a home game for the white supremacist movement in that sense, and a place that they probably felt that they could exploit. But again, the nature of the location, they could have chosen a lot of different locations. They chose one that influencers on, particularly on Twitter, which is proving itself to be really the worst of the major sites for me. You know. Could direct the attention of their followers to this relatively small event where people are really kind of, you know, bravely coming out and, you know, showing their support for the LGBTQ community, come over there and focus on disruption and creating terror.
Ari Drennan, who are the libs of TikTok?
Thank you. It's a little confusing. Libs of TikTok is not a TikTok account. They were shut down there a long time ago. It's a Twitter account that has, over the course of the year, sort of escalated its attacks on LGBTQ people and teachers, often LGBTQ teachers, and has more recently moved into highlighting events featuring drag queens with the allegation, you know, in one thread that they posted, that these events aim to, quote, confuse, corrupt, or sexualize kids.
And talk about how the role the libs of TikTok, their messaging more around how they talk about LGBTQ plus people. What are some of the more troubling things you found in this wave of attacks, either the actual violent attacks or, you know, attacks in the making because Coeur d'Alene didn't actually play out, as well as legislation across the country.
Yeah, unfortunately, libs of TikTok has been able to have a huge influence and a huge reach. They have 1.2 million followers on Twitter, which is quite large, but their reach gets even larger when you consider who they're influencing. We at Media Matters have tracked how content promoted by libs of TikTok has often ended up on Fox News, where the network has basically used the account as a wire service. The podcaster Joe Rogan, who has an audience of many million people, has frequently said that this is his favorite Twitter account, told his audience to go follow this Twitter account. And Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida, his press secretary actually credited the account Libs of TikTok with her decision to frame the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida as a quote-unquote anti-grooming bill rather than how it had been originally framed when it first attracted significant public debate.
And can you talk about the connection you see between anti-LGBTQ attacks and white supremacist groups, Ari?
The two are pretty inextricable. You know, we've seen that you mentioned Patriot Front, you mentioned the Proud Boys. A lot of these were the same groups that were sort of involved in or same actors that were involved in Charlottesville, that were involved in the storming of the Capitol. And, you know, now they're seeing the LGBTQ community as a target. They're portraying the LGBTQ plus community as a threat to children. And so, you know, we're continuing to see violent action there that's escalating off the sort of online rhetoric that we've been tracking. You know, in March, for example, Libs of TikTok was the top Twitter user that was amplifying LGBTQ hate attacks.
Also, Fox News recently ran a positive segment on a trans teenager. Can you talk about what the segment covered and the reaction to it and how that fits into the overall Fox attack on trans people?
Yeah, that was quite a surprising segment to see last Friday. Fox News, during one of their more news-focused programs, to the extent that those exist on that network, they ran a profile of a Southern California trans teenager, Ryland Whittington, and his supportive family, just talking about how, you know, transitioning was something that had allowed Ryland to really grow and develop as a person and, you know, having the support of his family. Predictably, you know, the sort of right-wing media, especially on Twitter, were very, very upset to see this kind of content on Fox News. They're used to a much, much more negative spin on LGBTQ content from Fox News. You know, for example, during one three-week stretch earlier this year, Fox News aired 170 attacks on trans people specifically, really focusing on swimmer Leah Thomas, on Biden administration officials, and, you know, fear-mongering about trans health care, about surgery for trans people, and just kind of generally creating this culture of fear. You know, multiple times this week, Fox News host Tucker Carlson has used his show to call for physical violence against LGBTQ people, who he's said, you know, kind of echoing some of the dangerous rhetoric that we've seen, are a threat to children.
So let me ask you about the Pride event. We're going to be talking more about it in a moment. But on Wednesday, President Biden signed an executive order banning the use of federal funds to finance conversion therapy. Also Wednesday, the New York Times published a piece titled The Battle Over Gender Therapy. There was the magazine, which stirred a lot of reaction, much of it negative, among many trans people online. What did you think of the piece?
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting and very long piece, but I think part of the reason that so many, you know, specifically trans people and, you know, people who've been working in the space for a very long time were frustrated by it is that the New York Times has sort of continued to sensationalize trans people and run these kind of like very long navel-gazy, like intellectual debate pieces about standards of trans healthcare, while ignoring the reality that, you know, most trans people don't have access to healthcare for economic or political reasons. And, you know, according to a study by the Williams Institute at UCLA, trans people are over four times more likely to experience violent victimization. This just fits in with a pattern of coverage that is not connected to the lived experience that many trans people are having in this country, at a time when this is a community that is under direct attack from right-wing politicians and actors across the country.
And finally, Michael Edison Hayden, are you concerned in this Pride Month seeing a massive uptick in violent attacks as gay pride you know, parades are happening all over the country, and not only, of course, this month, but beyond.
Well, the first thing is I don't want to increase alarm among people, and the last thing I would like to do is to give people pause for going out and celebrating Pride. You should do that because it's what's driving these fascists crazy. You know, if you back down from them, that's what they want. So that's the first thing. On the other hand, just in terms of monitoring, yeah, I mean, what concerns me and has concerned a lot of people who monitor these spaces over the last few months is, again, starting in April, in May, and right now into Pride, there has been a concerted effort to ramp up this rhetoric, tying LGBTQ people baselessly to pedophilia. And it's coming from influencers. A lot of them are on Twitter. And, you know, this message is being received by people who are potentially violent. So, yeah, obviously, I'm very concerned about it. But again, don't be afraid of these people. Just be careful, cautious, and alert to what might happen.
Michael Edison Hayden, senior investigative reporter with Southern Poverty Law Center, and Ari Drennan, LGBTQ program director for Media Matters. We'll link to all of your work. Next up, we speak with someone who declined an invitation to Biden's Pride Month celebration at the White House Wednesday to protest the detention of LGBTQ people. Stay with us. Mi país me duele por su mal gobierno, una muerte tras otra, sin remordimiento. La impunidad siempre es el procedimiento, es hora de recuperar el poder desde acá adentro. Palabras dadas como balas de conocimiento, te darán un escarmiento, corre que apenas caliento. Sigue el mandato violento, matando a gente inocente, dile al presidente que seguimos de pie. Con la vista al frente, la sangre ardiendo, con mi puño en libre. By Nina Dios. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show with someone who is invited to the White House on Wednesday, but didn't attend President Biden's Pride Month celebration. Genesette Gutierrez is a community organizer and advocate with Familia, Trans Queer Liberation Movement. She declined the invitation to attend to protest the Biden administration's detention and deportation of LGBTQ plus immigrants and asylum seekers. In a letter addressed to President Biden and First Lady Dr. Jill Biden, she wrote, quote, "There should be no White House celebration when trans and queer communities are suffering and being detained by your administration. There is no pride in detention." Genesette Gutierrez, welcome back to Democracy Now! President Biden signed executive actions to support the trans community, but you felt strongly you wanted to take a stand yesterday, although you were invited. Talk more about why you didn't go to the White House.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me back. LGBTQ people are under attack. Undocumented LGBTQ people, people living with HIV or any medical condition, are still being detained and deported. So knowing this, I couldn't join the celebration.
You're in Phoenix, which, by the way, is extremely hot for people who aren't following the news. I mean, well over 100 degrees now over the last days. Talk about Arizona and what's happening to people on the border.
Yes, thank you. Arizona, it's one of the states, along with Texas, Florida, Alabama, who have, you know, governors sign bills targeting specifically transgender people. And we are mobilizing with the No Pride Detention that it's not okay for our community to be targeted, to be scapegoated, because, you know, lives are at risk. And we will continue to do everything we can, Amy, in you know, the organizing power with community to make sure that our voices are heard and our issues are being centered.
Genesec Gutierrez, we spoke to you last in 2015 when you interrupted a speech by President Obama at the time. I just want to play a clip. This was a gathering celebrating LGBT Pride Month at the White House 7 years ago.
I've told you that the civil rights of LGBT Americans...
President Obama, release all LGBTQ detention centers. President Obama,
that's Genesec Gutierrez shouting, I'm tired of the abuse. So that's 2015, Genesec. And standing right next to President Obama was Vice President Biden, who is now president. Do you feel he has done any better? And if you did meet with Biden, what would you tell him?
He hasn't done better. He has been in power for too long, even before becoming president. He's been a senator, he was a vice president, and now he's the most powerful man in the world. And he's still finally, you know, signed an executive order. But, you know, it's not enough. It will never be enough. We cannot and will never forget, you know, the most vulnerable among us. So we cannot just applaud and, you know, say, yes, you've done enough, when no, that's, you know, that's the least you can do. And the demand continues to be in transit tension. And I have not had the opportunity to meet person, you know, in person with President Biden.
Can you talk more about President Biden and detention centers overall? You've been demanding the release of all people living with HIV and other medical conditions from ICE detention. There's the case of Roxana Hernandez in 2018, a trans woman from Honduras. If you can talk about her family suing ICE and DHS, Department of Homeland Security, and what came of that.
That is correct. There is a pending litigation against Department of Homeland Custom Borders Patrol, CBP, because Roxana Hernandez, a trans immigrant woman from Honduras, 33, should still be living. She should still be with us fighting for her dreams. And her death caused tremendous pain among the community. Her family was devastated to learn that she died while seeking protection in this country. Her nephew, only 7 years old or younger, you know, sent a voice recording a year ago while many community members came to D.C. under this administration demanding, right, accountability and justice for Roxana, you know, Victoria and Joanna, three trans women who died in ICE custody, and, you know, asking for the release of transgender people, people living with HIV or any other medical condition. So, you know, to hear that message from a young sibling of Roxana claiming and saying all she wanted to do was support and help her family and fight for her dreams, and she's no longer with that. So that to me is unacceptable.
Finally, Genesec, we have less than a minute, but if you can talk about LGBTQ plus asylum seekers stuck in Mexico, blocked from entering the United States due to Title 42. That was the Trump era policy. Many of these experiences recently documented in a Human Rights Watch report.
Yeah, Title 42 is impacting undocumented LGBTQ folks, people seeking asylum in this country, and it's not a safe condition that they're under, and we will continue to do everything we can to make sure that this administration gets rid of Title 42 to allow people to come in this country and seek that protection that they deserve.
Genesec Gutierrez, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Community organizer and advocate with Familia, Trans Queer Liberation Movement, speaking to us from Phoenix, Arizona. Also, Democracy Now! Is live streaming all the January 6th hearings. Today's at 1 p.m. Eastern Time at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Cam Baker, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Mary Kindlin, Juan Carlos Davila, our executive director, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman.
Hi, this is Kenny.
And Amanda Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Keep it right here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Everybody ready?
Hello, everybody.
And welcome to Whiskey Before Breakfast on WRCT Pittsburgh, WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark, Delaware, WUTC and WUTC HD1 Chattanooga, Tennessee, WKYWLP, Kaiser, West Virginia, or Tube City Online Radio from McKeesport, Pennsylvania. I'm Mando Richard. I've got a great show lined up for you. Start off on the liquored up side of the family like we always do. We'll close down on the gospel side of the family like we always do. And between, we've got lots of music, both old and new. I think you're going to enjoy the show a lot. Here comes something from down in Louisiana. The Red Stick Ramblers doing Drinking to You.
I'm drinking to you. Just thinking about you makes me feel so lonesome. Like I'm the only one who wants someone. Think about me all the time. I'm drinking to you. Sometimes so much I think it's gonna kill me. And I'm drinking to you, cause I'm thinking about you, and I'm thinking about you all the time. The old jukebox is playing what I'm not saying about how he stopped loving her today. They'll hang no wreath upon my door, cause you don't love me anymore. And hey, bartender's all I've got to say. I'm drinking to you, cause thinking about you makes me feel so lonesome. Like I'm the only one who wants someone to think about me all the time. I'm drinking to you. So much I think it's gonna kill me. And I'm drinking to you, cause I'm thinking about you, and I'm thinking about you all the time. Beats the love that you're not giving, so prop me up till I can't stand up and proclaim that I'm drinking to you. Just thinking about you makes me feel so lonesome, like I'm the only one who wants someone to think about me all the time. I'm drinking to you. Sometimes so much I think it's gonna kill me. And I'm drinking to you, cause I'm thinking about you, and I'm thinking about you all the time. Yeah, I'm drinking to you, cause I'm thinking about you, and I'm thinking about you all the time.